If I'm trying to land a transaction, I have an estimate of what the current leader is, but I'm not sure. You're actually just kind of trying to estimate who the current leader is. And oftentimes when you've seen like a shred from a validator, they've sometimes already finished like producing that block that you saw the shred for. It's a reasonable estimate that maybe the next leader is already leader, but then they can get skipped, right? Because of like consensus reasons. So then you might want to send to the like next three or four leaders too. There can be some really long forks. We've seen forks that go 100 validators, 100 leaders.
Scraping Bits is brought to you by the following sponsors. MEV Protocol. Maximize your ETH staking value with MEV ETH. Exclusively on MEV.io. And Composable. Execute any intent on any chain, coming soon to Mantis.app. That's MANTIS.APP. And Fastlane Labs, the only MEV, an intent-centric team that has a daily deodorant application rate of over 68%.
GM, everyone. My name's Degachi, the host of Scraping Bits, and today I'm with Ben from Marginify. How's it going, GM?
We're chilling, just, you know, a lot of travel. It's a busy few weeks, but, you know, very, very productive too. So, yeah, okay. Man, I'd say we're thriving.
We're thriving. God, he's a predator. All right, sir. Just for the people that don't know who are you and what do you do?
That's fair. So yeah, I'm Ben. My experience is mostly in like high performance computing and high frequency trading. Before I was at like Margin Research / MarginFi, I worked at two trading firms. One was called Kuna Capital, where I did like a mix of like, they literally will kill me if I talk about any of it. Same with Citadel. They're like, you can never talk about anything you do. I wrote fast code and did a lot of math at both Acuna and Citadel. So at Citadel, I was like quant research, and like at like Acuna, I did like a mix of like just like straight up like dev stuff and then like quant dev stuff. So worked like between a few teams. I ended up on like their crypto team for like the last few weeks I was there.
Acuna?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember they were trying to poach me into that a couple years ago.
Yeah, you know, that was like right around when they did like the like Pith integration and stuff. And yeah, at Citadel, just, you know, did a lot of, you know, Python data analysis stuff, math, worked on some strats.
When you left these, how did you get into, I guess, Solana? Because I don't think Acuna was even on Solana.
So I'd always been like very interested in like, you know, crypto, like distributed systems, stuff like that. Like for context, I was also like at the time studying at the University of Utah. Ended up just like dropping out of school entirely for like a lot of the same reasons I didn't go back to like Citadel. Right. Uh-huh. Which was just kind of just that, like, I wanted to like learn things that these places just couldn't teach me, or, you know, were right. Not interested in as, you know, like I was, right. You know, I was like super interested in crypto, and, you know, Citadel, let's just say that like their interests largely diverged with mine. The things that I wanted to do, you know, were not the kinds of things that they wanted to do. You know, I especially was like very interested in like DeFi, like on-chain stuff. And yeah, I don't think they wanted like much to do with any of that.
Right.
Didn't go back there. I say, I'm like, you know, ask like everyone at, you know, my school, like, do you guys have like research on like any of this? And they're like, nope, not really. And I'm like, okay, this is stuff that's like definitely like cutting edge. I want to learn more about this. I'm not going to learn about this at school. So yeah, I mean, just like straight up dropped out. At the time, I was just doing like MEV, but like a mix of like MEV on like ETH and Solana. Just
okay. Both of them.
Pay for school. Yeah. No, it was just kind of like a side project, taking a lot of like, you know, knowledge from the world of TradFi and just trying to find ways to apply that to DeFi, which was really fun. Because, you know, like, I think in some aspects, the problems are largely the same, but in other aspects, the problems are completely different. So I started trading a lot, you know, in DeFi, like especially after my Acuna internship. And then like after my Citadel internship, like met, you know, like all the margin people, like some of them went to school with me. Some of them I just like met at Mountain Dow. You know, like we were all like really interested in like solving the same problems.
Right.
So we started like the sister company / firm to like MarginFi, which is called Margin Research. So just, yeah, think of us as just like a big like Solana native trading firm, like big like liquidity provider, stuff like that, right?
Is this like market making or also MEV?
You know, I can't talk about the specifics of like we are out there. We are absolutely out there.
Okay, so both. So when you're doing Solana, like MEV and like ETH MEV, what were like the big differences between them? At least, yeah, because now you're deep in the weeds. So
yeah, that's fair. And like on ETH, the stuff I did was just so like dumb and like basic, and I never really dove much into like ETH world at all.
Gotcha.
More familiar with like the Solana world, right? But I mean, it's two completely different networks, right?
It is, yeah.
Two completely different VMs, right? With just like, I mean, like Solidity is nothing like Rust, right? EVM is nothing like SVM, right? They've got like completely different properties. You know, like on ETH, there's like so much like, I mean, people say like security on Solana is hard, which like it largely is because like the runtime is like, you know, like there's not a lot of like validation and verification that's like built into the SVM runtime, right? You know, like you'll see all these contracts have to validate accounts and stuff themselves, right? I mean, you could compare that to something like Move, where like a lot of the validation is just like built into the runtime. But like at least it has like some guarantees, like against stuff like reentrancy and just there's so many like obscure like kinds of ETH security vulnerabilities you can have that just searchers would use to just blow up each other's contracts,
like the transaction origin, message that sender.
Oh yeah, all that BS, right? Yeah, TX origin versus TX sender. Like, I mean, like at least I don't have to worry about any of that in Solana. But I mean, like, you know, just like to summarize, I'd say they're completely different, right? Completely different networks. They fan out information completely differently, right? ETH has like a mempool, Solana like doesn't really. So that's obviously big when it comes to like information fan out. Like the Solana system for fanning out information called Turbine, like there's nothing like that in ETH, right? I'd say they're largely like completely different. I think a lot of the stuff that like Solana trading and like ETH trading would like have in common are like the same stuff that like Solana and ETH trading would have, you know, in common with like TradFi. So like a lot of just the math, the like strategies behind things like market making and like pricing models, stuff like that, you know, is going to be roughly the same between TradFi or, you know, like on chain. You can definitely derive your information from different sources, but like, you know, like a lot of the models that you feed that information into to just like trade off of or like predict what the price is going to be or whatever, like those like end up largely being the same.
Yeah, I guess because it's like the fast confirmation times, right? So
yeah, so Solana definitely moves a lot faster too, right? So I think that like this is one distinction is that like, you know, like HPC is a lot more important on Solana than it is on ETH, right? Because the blocks obviously move a lot faster, 400 millisecond block times instead of, you know, like however long they are on ETH, much longer than that, right? And the current scheduling algorithm / block building algorithm that validators use, you know, like even like Jito validators, is that they are continuously ingesting transactions. So like latency can actually matter at like the millisecond level. Jitters are super high, right? Just because of inefficiencies in the scheduler and the quick server, many of which are largely getting fixed, some of which I'm probably still not allowed to talk about, but let's just say jitters super high. So like, you got to be like decently fast, but you don't have to be super fast because of how high jitter is right now. This will change time, right? Like I think HPC and latency is going to matter more and more and more and more, even when Jito auctions are working intended, like fully as intended, like how they're supposed to work. You have these theoretical 200 millisecond auctions. Like you look at how many transactions people are submitting, you need to be able to quickly and efficiently parse through these transactions, simulate the ones you need, look for any foot guns, whatever, right? And like this is like on a rolling basis, you're gonna be doing this super fast, right? It's like it takes a lot of computational power to do all this stuff, which is how cheap the Solana network is and like how fast moving it is. There's definitely like much more of an emphasis on like high performance computing, like writing code that goes very, very fast, right? So, you know, we definitely look for people, like at least like on like the engineering side that, you know, have very deep and extensive systems programming, like systems engineering experience, you know, like people that are actually familiar with how the hardware works, people that are super comfortable with C++ and Rust, right? Like I tend to find that people that are really good at C++ can pick up Rust really fast. I don't really think the opposite way is true. I find that people that are really good at Rust can sometimes have a really hard time picking up C++ because of how much that Rust kind of tends to like abstract away, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Rust just forces you to follow all these compiler rules, and all of a sudden, you know, you try to switch to C and you'll realize why those rules exist, but you'll learn the hard way, right? You know, like me, like, you know, because, you know, I was like, you know, much more of like a C++ guy, like still am. Going to Rust, like, I think all those compiler rules made like very natural sense to me because, like, oh yeah, I'm not going to be an idiot and, you know, do this thing that, like, if I were writing in C, it would just cause undefined behavior, right? So, like, I never really have problems with, like, any of the borrow checking or, like, lifetime right. stuff or anything like that. It's more just, like, coding in Rust now, I feel, is often, like, a handicap, because I will often do things that, like, are safe, but it takes a lot of syntactic sugar to convince the Rust compiler that what I'm doing is safe. And a lot of the abstractions that, you know, Rust provides to deal with these issues, like refcell and, like, you know, R and, like, stuff like that, like, those are not zero overhead. Like, those are very expensive, actually. I mean, refcell, not so much, but, like, Arc, yeah. I mean, like,
the
sequentially consistent atomic ordering, you're, like, atomics in general are expensive, right? You know, like, in x86, that's, you know, just, like, every single time you want to, like, allocate or deallocate an arc, right? You know, that's, like, your heap allocation, which is bad, right? You know, like, if you clone it, it's incrementing some atomic variable that's already, like, say, a lock instruction in x86. Super expensive, invalidates the cache line, that'll cause pipeline stalls on all your other cores. There's just tons of, like, standard Rust is littered with heap allocations. Like, you can't really find anything in standard Rust that's not gonna just do a bunch of allocations behind the scenes, so that will really slow down your code a lot. Mm-hmm. I find that, like, standard Rust in general is just not built with an HPC mindset. Like, it's built for more, like, security, like, stuff. But even then, like, you don't want to be doing heap allocations and have these unbounded data structures left and right. I would just love if there were an easy way in Rust for me to just be able to pre-allocate all my memory on, like, huge or gigantic pages, build everything off that pre-allocated memory, everything fixed size. But no, it's really, really impractical to do in Rust. Oh. Like, it just ends up with me having to call to this libc map. Anyways, I find from, like, an HPC perspective that C and C++ are, like, far superior when it comes to writing fast code and just, like, manpower efficiency for, like, writing fast code. Like, I find it way easier to write fast, efficient code in C++. Than Rust, because I just find myself constantly battling the Rust compiler because it, you know, never believes my code is safe and sound.
Doesn't, like, believe
99% of the time it actually is. But yeah, no, that's definitely been annoying. The code in Rust, I think it's a great language for certain things. For, like, a general purpose backend language, totally replace, like, Java. It has good security guarantees. Like, I would not, like, you know, if I was writing a security critical backend and my engineers weren't, like, super confident with, like, memory safety and stuff. Right. Yeah, I'd probably, like, have them do Rust over C. But then for, like, HFT, like nanoseconds matter kind of stuff, like, I think C is still, like, wins different levels, right?
So how would you become, like, a low-level Rust systems engineer then? What kind of paths you have to focus on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like at Citadel, like, I mostly did, like, quant research. Like, I didn't actually do that much, like, high-performance computing stuff. I was majoring in CS before I dropped out of school. But I honestly think I learned more outside of school than inside of school.
Yeah,
vastly overvalued these days. I learned a decent amount of Acuna, but, like, truthfully, like, you really just need to dive into it and, like, learn everything on the job, having a really strong understanding of, like, the fundamentals of, like, how the hardware actually works, like, how compilers actually work. And, you know,
definitely. I think the compiler is, like, super important, because that's how I learn about all the shit in, like, I guess, EVM. Is from looking at, like, the actual compiler and why memory and storage and stack, like, how it all works, the lowest level. Then when you get to, like, these abstractions, the functions, you actually know what's happening.
No, yeah, exactly. You know, right.
Move around properly.
Exactly, right. Like, a lot of errors you'll see with compilers or, you know, like, any kind of optimization stuff, like, to actually understand, you know, all of that, you need to understand how it actually works underneath.
Right? Yeah.
I don't know, like, if you don't have, like, a good idea of, like, what your code is going to compile to, it's going to be pretty hard to, like, actually, like, optimize it and, like, you know,
definitely.
Like, once you get past all the basics, like, oh, I got rid of all my allocations, like, oh, I, like, you know, I'm using, like, sound algorithms and, like, data structures that are, like, good for the job, like, once you're past all that basic shit, it's definitely a lot more important to know what the hardware is actually doing.
When we're talking about, like, we mentioned a lot there, but, you know, 1.18, I think, comes out today with Solana on 15.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was supposed to. Shit happened, which, like, really put I'm going to check right now, actually. Like, I can look at the MB announcements in Discord. Looks like they are not recommending that anyone move to 1.18 yet. Just today, they recommended that everyone move to 1.17.31, right? So, yeah, this like, all this congestion stuff, people DOSing the network and whatnot, like, really, really, like, set us back. Because instead of, like, prepping like 118 for release. Instead of prepping like 118 for release, we had to actually spend a lot of time debugging the causes of these congestion issues. I mean, there were many causes of these congestion issues. There's some I'm probably allowed to talk about. There's others I still am not allowed to talk about.
Spamming is a big issue. And yeah, I guess like, especially when like, I mean, when I was speaking to Lucas from Twitter, he was saying like upwards of 50,000 transactions per second. And then
that's like not even the most detrimental kind of spam, right? Like the most detrimental kind of spam is like something I'm still barred from talking about until the like relevant fixes are finally on mainnet. But there were like two or three other kinds of spam. I guess there's one that I can talk about.
Okay.
Has like gotten patched today. That's getting patched. I assume the network will like have this like fully adopted by, I don't know, like whenever this is actually published. So I can probably talk about that one and then like a few others as well. But like the just transaction spam is not even close to like the most detrimental kind of spam. Like it's still more pressure on like SigVerify. That SigVerify is very computationally expensive, but like what we saw even before like banking stage and like SigVerify and all that being overwhelmed, just like the quick server, Quinn.
Oh yeah.
It was entirely overwhelmed. It couldn't handle anything. And there were a lot of just sneaky tactics that like some people were using to like really just game the system and
land. Quick verify. Not quick verify. Through right. Quick verify.
Yeah. No. So like, you know, all these searchers were using some like pretty nasty tricks to like get their transactions through. And you know, like a lot of these tricks are very detrimental to the network, right? Like if one person is doing them, right, it probably like won't hurt the network that much. But when there's a lot of people doing them, like it does really very badly like hurt the network. So like as more
how do you actually like identify these? Are you looking at like pending transactions or just when to finalize blocks?
Yeah, I mean like it largely depends on like whatever the specific exploit is, right?
True.
Generally like when people find any of these exploits, it's largely the same process. Like, you know, there's one I was told I think I'll get a bounty for and like I'm still not allowed to talk about yet. But like that one I just found, like we were just trying to debug like why our transactions wouldn't land one day, and I just ended up kind of like deep diving the whole quick server. Okay. Like there were a lot of issues with that quick server, like many of which are like have been fixed and are being fixed. But then there was one thing I just saw that was like egregious that I'm not only are people incentivized to do this thing because it's like profitable if you do it, but like right. The more people that do it, the more people like are incentivized to do it. Like we captured TPU traffic samples on like our validators and stuff, and you know, like on like our relayers, just yeah. To like, see like how we can optimize performance of those. Like we've worked with Jito a bit on like optimizing like relayer performance too, or at least just like trying to like collect data. We're all very interested in like seeing the network like go as fast as possible. And like, you know, like it was very apparent in like the logs and like InfluxDB that like people were like doing this. And so that was like a combination of both like seeing the code and just like kind of like debugging stuff, like looking at logs and stuff. I definitely wasn't specifically bounty hunting. I was just kind of trying to see why our transactions wouldn't land. But, you know, like I feel like a lot of things like this, like a lot of exploits and whatnot that people find largely just come from just deep diving the code or just trying to debug something completely unrelated, and then they'll just stumble on this like exploit or something like that. Funnily enough, I don't know if you saw like the recent backdoor in Legacy, which is like compression utils, basically would allow the, you know, attacker to basically SSH, or it was an RCE, they could like just send some like SSH data and like just remotely execute any command on like any Linux box.
Oh damn.
Okay. Anywhere in the world as root, right? So it's super scary. But the security researcher that found this, the guy was from Microsoft, he found it because this backdoor just increased the time that it took to SSH into his box by like 500 milliseconds. It's actually very noticeable, right? I don't know, like I used to play like online games and stuff, like I could tell the difference between like 10 milliseconds and 20 milliseconds, right? Like if you're trying to SSH into a box, like 500 milliseconds is very noticeable. Like you're definitely gonna notice that.
Yeah,
so many bounties like often, or just like finding exploits, will just come from like trying to debug something that like maybe is like adjacent or like slightly related. And you know, like you'll kind of like follow that rabbit hole down, and you know, like maybe like eventually you'll find one of these bounties or like exploits or something, right? Yeah, exactly. There's many of them that are still out in the wild. Searchers are still out there exploiting them. There's plenty of them in quick server banking stage, etc., right? There's plenty I'm sure that not even we know about.
I think it's a very interesting, like, I think I noticed this as well when trying to learn Solana. It's like the docs is not like a complete one-to-one to what the code actually is.
Definitely not. And I think like Anza, Solana Labs, like et cetera, like already knows about many of these.
So it's like
there's only so much to do, right? Like I've definitely like, I'm sure that like, I think they're aware of most of these, or at least they're aware of like some of the adverse incentives that like they've created at like different parts of the code base. You know, they're just very resource constrained, obviously, and they just can't fix all this overnight. The most important stuff for the network first. And, you know, like the more detrimental these become and like the more people that like start exploiting and like abusing these things, right, we'll probably move it up on the priority list, assuming it's like one of the exploits/tricks that actually like slows down the network.
Yeah, definitely.
There's more like targeted stuff that like you can do that like you could target them at like critical infrastructure like Pith and stuff, but like instead searchers will just like do this to like other searchers, just like PvP tactics that you can do, and like they won't slow down the network, but they'll just like slow down other searchers.
there's a lot of interesting PvP stuff on Solana when it comes to like MEV versus MEV bots. One of them, the major ones that I've heard, which I thought it was super interesting, was like actually locking other people's like programs.
Oh yeah. People see you can't lock a program, but you can lock like their accounts.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Have you ever seen like what is that like the current meta, or is there something more going on here? I don't know how to find this stuff, but
yeah, good question. Like it's something that like people I think used to be doing a lot and then like stopped. I'm not really sure why. But no, it was like something that like I definitely remember like seeing people do this a while back. Like searchers started to, it was a pretty nasty technique they were doing too. Like it wasn't just like sending a bunch of transactions that locked the accounts. It was like sending transactions that were crafted in a specific way such that like consensus would reject any future transactions.
Oh damn! Okay.
Specific accounts. There's many ways to essentially like touch accounts such that like that specific account can't land any more transactions for the rest of the block.
It's nothing like Eve.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty powerful tactic, right? And you know, like for people to be able to like figure something like this out, you know, they're definitely either like Solana core devs themselves or like like reverse engineer the code base and are pretty familiar with like how consensus and like banking stage actually work.
Yeah it seems just, like to actually get these two techniques you need to understand the validator super well, but are they, if they're just like a solo searcher and they're not running a validator, how would they know like the accounts to lock and all this other shit?
Well, I mean, like, you know, they probably, I don't know, maybe they just enumerate who their top competitors are, or they figure out why they're not getting some opportunities, right? Maybe they're just not getting some sandwich, some token snipe, some ARB, right? And then they'll be like, oh, it's this competitor that got it. Let's, you know, do this exploit so they can't land anything before me, right?
That's so interesting.
Yeah, there's some nasty stuff that, like, searchers have been doing. Like, I think, like, Labs and Anza are, like, very much, like, aware of a lot of these things and just like have not like gotten around to patching them yet.
Oh yeah. I think there must be so many, right? Like the code base is giant.
And you know, there's definitely like tech debt, right? That's kind of what the public communication has been on this recent congestion. It's tech debt, right? Like to sum it up, right? You know, Solana had to move very fast, just as their competitors were doing, right? They had to get to go to market, and you know, it worked, right? You know, like we've got a thriving ecosystem now, but on the other hand, there's like a lot of tech debt that's been left over in the code base, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, you know, we couldn't do right the first time, that like now the second time we can finally go back and do right now that we have like a functioning network and ecosystem, right? Yeah. Obviously when stuff like this congestion shit happens that like makes the network absolutely unusable, that goes up pretty high in priority. So like, I don't know if you've looked at any of the patches yet and V1.31, but you know, you can see what some of the exploits were.
Oh, looking at the patches, it's kind of like a game patch,
right? Yeah, it was pretty nasty. It was definitely pretty nasty.
Yeah. So, what do you think it takes for someone to like actually do well on Solana as a searcher? Because it seems like you got to know the validator incredibly well at almost every layer to find like techniques that can give you an edge. But then beyond that, like what else is there? Obviously, like systems engineering, and let's say you rewrite Tokyo, for example, because it's just fucking shit. Then, like, what else apart from that? It seems like a sum up, at least from my naive point of view.
Yeah. No, yeah, it definitely makes sense. Right. I think, like, I don't think there's one clear cut way to succeed. Like, I think a lot of different searchers, they do different things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's some people that still sandwich. There's some people that like ARB. There's some people that like Snipe tokens. And, you know, there's a lot more long tail stuff out there, too. If you, you know, go out there, check the chain, you might find a few interesting things here and there, right? But, like, lots of different searchers have different kinds of alpha.
It's also interesting because there is no mempool as well. So how would they do a lot of this shit without just finding it?
Yeah, so there's, like, there's two private mempools right now, as far as I know. There's two, and they've got still, like, a decent amount of stake, and, like, the stake the private mempools have is growing every single day. There's definitely, there's so much money in, like, all this sandwiching stuff that, like, these private mempools are offering validators, like, a fuck ton of money. So, like, be onboarded to their private mempools. And, like, the main concern that most of these validators have are, like, just PR concerns or, like, legal concerns behind, like, enabling, like, sandwiching or anything like that. Like, at least, like, from what I've heard. I mean, I'll say that, like, we don't do, like, any, like, sandwiching stuff, mostly for just, like, legal reasons.
Sandwiching is also, you can only really do that on the validator, though, from what I know. Like, how would you be able to do... Oh, I guess if you've got a mempool and bundles, then...
Yeah, I mean, like, if you know someone's going to land, there's nothing stopping you from just front-running them.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Because I heard about, like, the validator sandwiching, where validator will have, like, a certain amount of stake, and maybe they get X amount of blocks, you know, 100 blocks, and then they will just sandwich every single transaction in that block.
Yeah. Like, what's one thing that's tricky, right, is, like, even if you don't have that much stake, like, there's this, like, multiplicative effect, because, like, most, like, RPCs will send to, like, three or four validators ahead, or, like, maybe it's two, but, like, I think at one point it was three or four, maybe it's two now, but, like, all these validators will send to, like, some, or, like, RPCs will send to the current leader and, like, future leaders.
Right.
Right. So, like, even if you only have 5, 6% of the stake, you'll see a lot more than, like, 5 to 6% of the transactions. You'll see enough that, like, you know, we see these sandwich bots that are pulling, like, multiple six figures a day still, even with their very limited stake, which is very scary. They're definitely seeing more than 3, 4, 5% of the transactions, even though that's really only the stake that they have.
So they're seeing more with less somehow.
Well, so it's not like a somehow. It's like, you know, like, you don't just see transactions 1 year later. You'll see transactions before your leader, a little bit after your leader. Right, because these RPCs will just kind of blindly, like, the next few leaders.
It's right? Like the forwarding thing, right?
Yeah. Well, so if I'm trying to land a transaction, I have an estimate of what the current leader is, but I'm not sure. And I know that, like, who the next three leaders are going to be too. Like, there's no reason for me not to send to, like, the next three or four leaders, because there's several reasons why the current leader might not be able to include my current transaction, even if I'm right about, like, who the current leader is, right? Like, it's always, you're actually just kind of trying to estimate who the current leader is based on how far, like, fans that information is this thing called, like, shreds, right? So, like, you have to estimate who the current leader is based on, like, what shreds you've seen. And oftentimes when you've seen, like, a shred from a validator, they've sometimes already, like, finished, like, producing that block that, like, you saw the shred for. So then maybe it's a reasonable estimate that maybe, like, the next leader is already leader, but then they can get skipped, right? Because of, like, consensus reasons. So then you might want to send to the, like, next three or four leaders too. There can be some really long forks. Like, we've seen forks that go, like, 100 validators or, like, 100 leaders.
There's definitely big forks. And, like, you know, most people using the network don't realize this, but we've seen some very, very large forks. It's just good to send to as many validators as you reasonably can, I think, right?
Yeah, like, seems like,
you
know, it.
You have limited bandwidth. Transactions, like, expire after a certain amount of time. But, like, it's usually not a bad thing to send to more leaders if you can afford the bandwidth. Just how the network incentivizes landing transactions, right?
Right, yeah. You just send to everyone, because why would you not? It's like in Ethereum with block builders. If one block builder owns, like, 40% of the network, and then you have three others that are different percentages, you just send to all of them because you want to land.
Right. Yeah, no, of course. Absolutely. And, I mean, Solana's got even crazier builder centralization than ETH.
Yeah, it definitely does.
You know, we're friends. I love them. Have a lot of respect for them. It's good that they're neutral, right? Because, like, on ETH, you've got, like, SCP with half the market share, and they're completely vertically integrated,
which is super powerful, right? Vertical integration is just immensely valuable. Like, I can't even, like, explain how valuable it is to have the vertical integration that, like, SCP and Wintermute do with their builders on ETH. That's just, it's just, like, an immensely valuable thing.
Have you seen any of this on Solana?
Like, vertical, like, builder integration?
So,
yeah, this, I mean, like, people are calling the mempool, like, Forge. I think it's just, like, some ex, like, P2P guys or something that just have like a lot of their own stake that have seen how valuable sandwiching is. And like there's this like Solana Forge. It's like a fork, like Jito Block Builder or something. I don't really know exactly what it is, but it's some open source software that allowed you to like make your own bundles and stuff. So I think they like forked that out in the open even. So like people knew it was them.
Oh God.
Basically just made like some modified client to sandwich transactions. And I'm sure they built their like private mempool too. So they can like try to like front run transactions before like their leader slots are up.
Yeah.
Just like stuff like that. It's definitely something we've seen with that private mempool. Like that's totally private. It's all their stake. I think it's some like XP2P people. I'm not like entirely sure, but like some of their like GitHubs are public and like one of them like used to be like a P2P. So like, I'm not sure, but I know they're like the largest like private mempool out there that are sandwiching people.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, it seems interesting. I mean, Jito was mentioning he was getting like 20,000 bundles per second. And like when you have all the other standalone transactions as well, the conflicts of building the block when you have, I guess, these two types of transactions, it seems like an interesting problem. And yeah, it makes me wonder, like, if you have, let's say you get like 50,000 transactions and 20,000 bundles, and each bundle has like, let's say, 3 transactions, then that's like 100,000 transactions.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, you can scale with like really good hardware and like most optimized software, but I was also thinking like you must not sim everything. There must be some kind of shortcut people take to actually
Of course, right? It's like you want to like filter these transactions like as reasonably as possible, as fast as possible. Like first you got to narrow it down to like the subset of transactions that you're actually interested in, right? And like given how like slow like the Solana like VM is, I mean like just comparatively to like our own heuristics and stuff, right?
Also, yeah, can't you just build your own like custom VM to not make it slow?
Of course, right? You know, these are all things that, you know,
everything's an optimization problem.
Blah, 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 right? Like, you know, these are obviously things that we can do and like want to do, right?
Right.
You know, we can come up with some heuristics that can like filter down these like hundreds, thousands of useless transactions to just like a few probably useful transactions, and you know,
yeah,
we can very accurately predict like whether or not we'll actually be interested in a transaction or not. It's actually like, we haven't really had a hard time predicting that thus far, actually.
Okay, thus far.
You know, like once Fire Dancer's out and, you know, we go to like more like a million TPS or something ridiculous.
Oh yeah, that would be really insane. Yeah.
We'd like to improve our systems even more, have faster models for like predicting whether or not like transactions are useful to us or not. It's just a never ending like HPC game, right? Jito's gonna have to keep up with that too, right? I mean,
like, yeah,
Block Builder for their own system, right?
Yeah.
So it's a never ending game of can you keep up with the tip and how fast can you do it?
100%. Yeah, 1 million TPS with the Fire Dancer client, that's going to cut out a lot of people, I think.
It's possible, right? Like, they're always very hesitant to, like, advertise the million TPS, yeah, right?
As of course.
They've got to deal with, like, Amdahl's Law, right? And, you know, like, because, like, Frankendancer is still going to be, like, and that's, like, half Fire Dancer, half Solana Labs client, is still going to be bottlenecked by, like, the Solana Labs client components. So similar TPS to, like, the Solana Labs client, because Amdahl's Law, right? But it'll, like, I think it'll be, like, Fire Dance networking and block building. So, like, maybe, like, it'll be just more efficient block packing. You might be able to identify, like, some higher fee-paying transactions a bit faster. I don't know. You have to reach out to Fire Dance people about that. I don't imagine, like, a Frankendancer that, like, TPS will be that much higher, right? And even when Fire Dancer's out on mainnet, we're just going to have to raise, like, block limits, right? Because right now, like, the block CU limits don't really allow for, like, that kind of, like, TPS, right? Like, unless all the TPS is, like, super low CU transactions. But, like, you know, like, the network itself is always going to be bottlenecked by the slowest client, right? So, like, if we want to keep the Anza client, which is, like, Agave, around, then, you know, we're also going to have to hyper-optimize Agave as well and, like, get it up to speed with Fire Dancer, right? Or else there's always some possibility that all the operators just decide to adopt Fire Dancer because it's faster, and then people start raising CU limits and, like, Agave can't even keep up anymore, right? But, like, for the sake of client diversity, like, I think that's something that, you know, should be really important to Agave is, and the Anza team, right, is getting this client super, super fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, making sure this thing can handle the kind of TPS that Fire Dance is going to do, right? Because again, Amdahl's Law, lot of the network and, you know, is always going to be bottlenecked by the slowest horse, right? Or, you know, the bottom 33% in Solana.
Yeah, it's interesting. Especially with the contract, like, there's something, I actually don't get this on ETH. When someone creates like a bot, right, and they want to do anything, it could be long tail, short tail, even just interacting with people, like with protocols, you have to call basically, you can put all of the view state into one function, kind of condense it into a single call or API call. With Solana, I don't know how you do off-chain stuff with, like, let's say you want to chain like a giant arbitrage, for example. How do you get all the reserves? There's going to be a giant, like, I guess, mapping, just like some kind of storage of all the reserves. But if you're not the validator as well, then I guess you have to go back to the last block and then see all the reserves again. I don't know. It's a completely different game.
I try to estimate like the balances so you can like do the math.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm sure most arbors just use like Geyser, which is just like, it lets you like,
oh, it's like an,
okay, dream like account updates, and then they'll just like, use whatever their view is to do all their arb math.
That makes sense. Yeah. Guys, they wouldn't.
Yeah. It's basically just like live streaming like transaction results, and they'll just like live stream all that, and then they'll just use whatever their current view of the state is to do their like arb math. It'll generally be pretty accurate, because like usually what happens is like you'll just have one like dumb TX that like causes like 20% slippage or just something, and then there's all the transactions that are going to come after that. But like trading arbors, I really imagine it just like, how fast can you convert those shreds into tradable information, and then how fast can you turn that tradable information into a transaction that's actually landed on chain, right?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because like without, I guess, Geyser, because if it's 400 millisecond blocks, then you have to call all these different accounts which hold all the state. And let's say if you're just grabbing the last block, then you have to go through all those APIs, every single one. And that's just like, there's no way you can just get all those in that amount of time. So it's like, okay.
So like imagine what most of these searchers are doing is they're just probably like keeping, like they're just tracking all the accounts they're interested in, and they're just like streaming them through Geyser, right? So they're not like making all these API calls like all the time. They're just like streaming account updates, and then like, and like every single time they get a new account update, they're probably just like comparing to their like already local view of state to like see if it is or not, right?
The validator stuff is actually the most interesting for me, because on ETH, there's like so many pieces of infrastructure. You have the relay, the validator, and then you have, yeah, relay, validator, block builder, and then you also build your own bot. But then on Solana, well, you build your own bot plus like the program, right? But then on Solana, you just have validator and bot. I guess relay as well. But what is the value proposition of relay if you wanted to run it by yourself? I guess data. But then,
yeah, I mean, like, it's nice that it's like a separate process, right? So like, you know, like, you know, multi-process architecture is always good, right? Like if I want to swap out one component, well, like not having like this egregious downtime on my validator, that's nice, right? Collecting data and stuff is obviously going to be nice too, right? For just like optimizing the network kind of purposes. I tend to like multi-process architecture, like so long as like it's like zero overhead, which like the Geyser relayer is like obviously not zero overhead, right? I mean, like it uses the same like Solana Quick Quinn Tokyo server, which is, it's slow. I mean, this is in Geyser's documentation. Those relayers will hold all those transactions for like 200 milliseconds, right? Which, you know, it's so they're optional time to run, right? By definition, you are slowing the network down, right? And there's many of us out there that think that this actually destroys more value than it creates. Because if you're slowing the network down into like 200 millisecond auctions, you know, market makers aren't going to be able to quote as tight. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, their quotes, like the market can move a lot in 200 milliseconds, and you need to quote accordingly. And you know, like, especially in times of higher volatility, this is going to result in quotes that are super wide, and retail will always be able to get better fills on Binance and on like OKX or something than on Solana, right? This is bad. This isn't what we want, right? We want a network that is maximally competitive with the centralized world. And, you know, like, what's the point of cutting out the middleman if like the middleman still gives you a better price, right? So I'm going to like, I've talked to them about this. I've talked to like other people in the network about the same problem. It's a very hard problem to solve. Auctions are a really easy way to do like fee one of Geyser, right? And like Geyser's got so many different like priorities that like I can't imagine this is like
number one on their priority list. For like most people, the network still works fine. If we really want Solana to be maximally competitive with like a lot of these centralized finance applications that are really fast, like particularly like exchanges. And I mean, I think oracles are pretty important for having like millisecond, even sub millisecond granularity data.
Right.
If we want systems that are really that fast, we're going to need to figure out how to like, you know, extract as much value as possible and like return as much of that value possible to validators without destroying more value than we're actually creating. Because right now, like, a lot of this MEV is just because like people are like dumb and just like cause massive damage, and that like AMMs have most like the market share. But once like routing is like fixed, so like a market maker and you know, there's like the main aggregator people use is Jupiter, right? As market makers on Solana get more sophisticated and routers get smarter, more and more of this flow is just going to be going to market makers instead of these just like trash AMMs. Like a market maker, I think, can just always give retail a better price than these AMMs. There's some AMMs out there that are like pretty good that like try to like make predictions on where the price is going to go. Like I know like Lifinity does this like based on like data, which is like pretty cool. So I think for a while and probably still Lifinity actually makes money just because like they can see an Oracle update, they can adjust their price to like whatever like Binance is, and like all the other AMMs haven't been adjusted yet. So then all these R bots will like give all that like money to Lifinity, right? Because, you know, like they'll just take the super like out of line price from like Orca or like Radium or something. And then they'll like the other leg of that trade, just like the offload leg,
yeah,
will be like Lifinity. And then like Lifinity actually gets to collect a decent spread on that. So that's like the main way a lot of market makers on Solana make their money for the most part is like a lot of like the best flow for these market makers is like from these atomic ARB bots, right? And I think generally like ARB is considered to be like toxic flow. Yeah, generally ARB is toxic flow, right? I mean, like if you think of ARB in like from like the centralized world, like centralized exchanges, like if you're getting ARBed, that's almost always like toxic flow, right? Because like ARB bots on centralized exchanges are super sophisticated. They have like great pricing algorithms. They can sniff out whether your quotes are mispriced pretty well. Versus like on chain, a lot of this ARB is just from like these dumb like AMMs, which aren't actually that smart, and just like retail users just causing insane amounts of price impact. And then like, and so like that's very non-toxic flow for like the on-chain market makers. Some of the least toxic flow ever. Actually, like I think on-chain market making in general is still just extremely non-toxic. Like the market makers that are doing it right now, you know, they're all making like decent money, I think, just by like quoting around like Binance mid. Yeah, that's what it seems like, at least.
Interesting. What are the interesting games you see in like the MEV world on Solana, though? We've already talked about like, you know, the sandwiching, the yeah, kind of exploits you find in consensus.
Yeah. But yes, there's probably, I'm going to just make sure this got passed in 1.30. Okay, this one did. There's a few that got passed in 1.17.31. There's so many exploits that I'm sure people still don't know about that even I don't know about, perhaps, right? That are right. People are still using, but yeah, there was one that was pretty egregious. Like, I'm sure you're familiar with like the concept of like staked connections and stuff, right? And like how validators get more bandwidth. So there was this like odd logic in the Quick server that said like, hey, every staked node has like a minimum amount of bandwidth that they're allowed to have, like a minimum amount of streams, as they're called in Quick. And like a stream, you can kind of think of it as like one transaction in the context of Solana. That's not true for like the whole Quick protocol. Like streams can be much bigger, but like in Solana, it's like one transaction, one stream, right? But like essentially, like the point is that like the logic was essentially this, right? If you have stake, you get at least like 8 transactions every 100 milliseconds, or maybe it was 20 transactions every 100 milliseconds. Right. It was like this floor, right? So like it got like clamped up, essentially, right? That like if you had like very low stake, that like you would still get more throughput than like unstaked clients, or like at least as much throughput as unstaked clients, even if you had like pretty low stake, like even like 10 sol, 100 sol, 1,000 sol, right? But then the actual function that the Quick client used was otherwise linear with regards to how much stake you have. So like obviously, like what are people going to do to get more bandwidth, right? Like you can only get so much stake, right? Stake's like pretty competitive, yeah, right? Like, you know, you only have so much stake. But if there's just some minimum, like what are people going to do?
I wonder how, there's like a whole stake game as well. It's like people trying to get the delegation of other people's stake.
Yeah.
Judo's doing basically, but for their own purposes.
Yeah, no. Stake is very competitive these days, right? You know, I tweeted on like some like one anon of mine like 2 years ago that like Stake is so undervalued. Like this is how easy it is to get Stake right now. Like,
and now it's hard.
Laughing like 2 years later. Now I just gotta like go back to that account and like retweet that because Stake is prophecy's been fulfilled. Stake on Solana is extremely competitive, extremely valuable.
Yeah.
Anyone that has a lot of SOL that is looking to stake that SOL, hit me up. We'll give you an amazing deal on that stake. Like a phenomenally amazing deal, better APY than any of these top validators.
So they all say give you a better APY. So what makes like let's say someone did have a shit ton of stake and they're like, oh, I want to give this to someone. Why would they do that? Like, why would they hand it over to someone? And how do you make it more juicy for them to take that deal?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, most people that have a lot of stake just want money. Just give them money, dude. The more money you give them, the more willing they probably are to stake to you. I'm sure some of these guys probably want something like rev share, but, like, I feel like most of these guys just want, like, stable income.
Like straight up like a salary for the steak.
No, like straight up. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like most people, like most whales that have a lot of steak just want return on the steak and don't know how to get that return. Right. So like the competition is generally going to be from people that like do know how to give them a return on that steak, be it by modding their validators to vote better and to vote faster. Or maybe they're just doing some kind of MEV and then just, you know, giving the validators some like side payment or like giving like the stakeholder some like side payment, right, in exchange for like that.
There must be some like vote MEV as well, because that's like another type of transaction, right? So
yeah, so I mean, like there's people that like I don't know exactly what you're referring to here, but there's like people that mod their validators to like be faster or to like vote smarter so they can higher APY. And yeah, no, I mean, like there's like, I'm sure like the top searchers are like also like modding their validators and stuff, like trying to like, I mean, like egg is, there's like a lot you can optimize with like the runtime and like replay and like quick and like literally like everything. You can
literally optimize. Everything in the
validator. It's true. Right? You just got to find where the biggest bottlenecks are and eliminate them one by one, right? Like it's Amdahl's law. It is whack-a-mole. As soon as you optimize one thing, there's just like the next bottleneck that you have to optimize.
Oh, God. So
funny, Fire Dancer calls it Amdahl Street Justice. I'm pretty sure that term was coined by Kevin Bowers, but like ever since I heard that, I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's so true though. It's pretty funny.
Interesting. What do you see the market going, let's say like 6 months from here for searches, validators, Solana in general?
Yeah, I mean, like stakes definitely gonna get more competitive, especially now that they've like fixed a lot of these exploits that like you can use to like have stake connections without that much stake. I never got to finish talking about this one because it was pretty.
Oh yeah, funny. Keep talking about it, man.
It's fixed now, right? You can see it now in V131, which as we speak, the network is patching, and by whenever this is out, that will be fully patched. I imagine by like tomorrow or day after tomorrow. But yeah, so what you could do is, you know, a lot of people didn't really have much stake, right? A lot of searchers like are lacking on stake. They just don't have a lot of stake. Stake's pretty competitive. It's tough to get stake these days, right? But you need it to have that bandwidth, right? Because, you know, X stake is allocated like Y amount of bandwidth, and it's completely linear now. And before it wasn't linear, right? And when it's not linear, you've got an exploit, right? At least in this case. So what people would do, right, is, you know how I said there was some minimum, right? Like you got some, like 20 streams every 100 milliseconds, like minimum or something like that. What people would do, and we saw this on mainnet like crazy, and we'd seen this for a while, is that people would make a whole bunch of one stake validators or like two stake validators, like whatever the minimum was. And they would instantly have a connection that like gave them as much throughput as an on-stake connection. And then they could just make like 1,000 of those. They just completely swamped the network in Cybele throughput, right? And like the problem with this exploit was it essentially like violated like this invariant that like the network had to be capped to some amount of packets per second. And the cap on that packet per second was that linear function. They just let this like up clamp slip through. So like, you know, a very low stake player would still have some minimum. And you know, right. That obviously gets exploited really fast. So what we'd see on mainnet is there were like 100 or like 200 or just some ridiculous amount of a super low stake validator. They were using all of their staked connections, all of them, and just spamming mainnet like crazy. Like searchers have been doing this for a very, very long time, I'm sure, right? I mean, like if I look back at our logs, like these guys have been connecting for like a very long time. Like all these one stake validators that had like it was essentially like an exploit that you could use to get unlimited throughput.
And like during all this congestion debugging, like it came back up because like we were just trying to figure out who's spamming the network right now, who's spamming the most, right? And a lot of the people that we found that were spamming mainnet were just these one stake validators that just had like the maximal amount of quick connections open and were maxing out their throughput. There were hundreds of them. Like who knows how many of them were like actually like owned by the same searchers that were just trying to game the network. Because like since there's jitter, you just like, you know, there's only one counter to jitter. You just got to like have a lot of throughput, spam more, right? So, yeah. You know, there's like a lot of opportunities. You only have X amount of bandwidth. Prioritizing your bandwidth helps, yes, but like the more bandwidth you have, the better. So like what a lot of people did is, yeah, just made a ton of these one stake, two stake validators. They voted once every four epochs.
Yeah.
You're allowed to destake a delinquent after five epochs.
Yeah.
So it cost them virtually nothing to have these staked identity keys. Like it just, you stake one soul to it and you just automate that and you do it like 100 times and you've got like essentially like unlimited bandwidth just by using like a bunch of like staked keys that only have one soul, which obviously just like completely broke everything and just caused
yeah.
like spammers to like completely like just violate the assumptions that like the network made about like what the packet per second cap was. And that definitely contributed to like overwhelming banking stage along with just, you know, the other various types of spam that like we were seeing as well. Another thing that we saw, right, that also got patched is that the connection table was thrashing. Because, you know, there's only 500 allowed quick connections to a validator at the same time. We had like tens of thousands of like RPCs and like bots and stuff trying to connect to the TPUs. And like what just ended up happening is that the quick server performance ended up just completely degenerating. So like if you looked at the graph, the normal, like the TPU would actually receive less packets during the leader window than like right before the leader window. Because of how many people kept trying to connect, no one could establish a connection or send any packets at all, which like exasperated the problem even more.
Interesting. It seems like being good at InfoSec is actually quite powerful with Solana.
Oh, absolutely. If anyone's found any Solana bounties, we are hiring.
Yeah, it seems like that's the real MEV is just InfoSec, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more, actually. I think that's super, super important. And, you know, I'm hoping we don't find more bounties, but like might happen. We'll see, right? We'll see. We're usually pretty good about reporting things. I don't know. We're not really the type of people that are like very like short-term thinkers that will like just exploit and kill the network. Like we're very much long-term thinkers. Oh, like that there's another exploit that people are using. And I'm sure like Solana will like do a longer like post-mortem of this. But I think also got fixed in like 1.17.31. But it was like essentially another way where you could like reflect off any validator to have like stake connections just by using like any other validator as like a mirror. So it was kind of like a reflection attack where like there was a certain way that you could send transactions to other staked validators. And then those staked validators would then like send your transactions to the leader. So like it was another way to have like unlimited like staked connections.
Oh yeah. Like, yep. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And yeah, we saw, I won't call them out, but there was a big infra provider that was doing this. And, you know, it was super, super detrimental to the network. Like, other people had, like, found this and just refused to use it because of just how detrimental it would have been to the network.
Right.
And we tend to, like, want to actually, like, report these issues because, you know, we're very much, like, long-term thinkers instead of just, like, exploiting
them short-term. Yeah. I mean, if you're on the network, then there's no network anymore.
Exactly, right. Yeah. We want Solana to win in the long run, outcompete centralized exchanges in the long run.
Way better long term than short term. Where do you think it's going now in the short term? Like, let's say six months? Because, you know, shit changes in crypto so frequently.
Oh, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I think every new Solana version is going to introduce new challenges. And, I mean, like, for, like, everything we fix, we introduce new potential vulnerabilities, new potential exploits, and you know, we change the game, right? You know, this is like market microstructure, but for Solana, there's teams of like HFT firms that they're called like market microstructure teams. And their whole job is just like to figure out how the like exchange works, figure out how the matching engine works. Basically, right. It's just like to reverse engineer the exchange from the outside as best as possible to like you're essentially gaming the system. Is what you're doing on like one of these market microstructure teams. Like you're trying to figure out how many matching engines are there?
how do they work? What's like the minimum possible latency we can get? You know, are there just tricks? And like, it's like a lot of the same like red team, like Solana stuff, right? You know, like these teams will absolutely try and find exploits and exchanges and like matching engines and stuff to like get their orders through. You know, like I think at least in the centralized world, a lot of this is like illegal. Like if you find exploits in the matching engine, you're just like supposed to like report it.
Yeah.
Not like abuse it. It's like a decentralized, like cowboy land, Solana. There's not really like, it really is an FFA. And like, there's not a lot of incentive for searchers to report a lot of this stuff. I mean, like you saw like the thing that Bloxroot just posted yesterday or whatever about how they were making like 10 grand a day, like
on all, right? Yeah.
You know, like the different tricks and exploits that like they use to land transactions. Like a lot of these opportunities are just objectively so much more valuable than the bounties.
But yeah,
it'll definitely help if Solana like raises their bounty payouts.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I don't think that'll like fix everything, but I definitely think that will like, help.
Just using the exploit is way more valuable than actually giving it away. So
right, of course,
just like normal exploit hacking, red teaming, like black hatting, except it's not as illegal, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, if you stumble upon something that will make you a lot of money, it's not hurting the network. The money you can make off of it is way more than like the money that you get from reporting it. All of the incentives are aligned for you to keep that information to yourself. It's perfectly legal to do so too. I mean, like at least like as far as I know, I mean, I don't want to like say that, but like at least like in terms of legality, like, I don't know, like if you just found a way to get a connection to the Quick server, like better the average person, and like this doesn't slow down the network that much, like, yeah, I mean, like the incentive absolutely is like, yo, I'm going to like keep this to myself and like, yeah, just, like, you know, use this to actually like land transactions when the network is congested or, yeah, I don't know, something like that. You get the point.
Yeah, definitely. Interesting. Well, I'm keen to keep getting into this game. Sounds like a hacker's paradise, to be honest.
I mean, like a lot of like the same tactics that like you would use in InfoSec, right? Like I think you very much still use to like figure out how to trade best on Solana or to mev best on Solana. I mean, you'll even see some of that on ETH, right? Like searchers blow each other up all the time.
Yeah, but I think you cap it out pretty easily on like how sophisticated you can get on ETH, which is why I think it's kind of boring.
That's fair. I think like with how fast, like you asked me where I see things going, Solana moves so fast. There's always new versions being dropped. There's always like new features and stuff that are being released. I mean, it could be going anywhere, right? I mean, like who knows how these next few patches are going to change the game, right? I know like Firedancer is getting closer and closer and closer. That's obviously going to put more and more and more of an emphasis on high performance computing. I would really love to see these auction times be lowered below 200 milliseconds on the Jito side. I think I've talked to them about this because I think they also understand this is like a problem. Like I think their like goal is also to get those auction times like down. But right now, I don't think like the relayers like holding transactions for 200 milliseconds is like that good for like Solana. Like I think short term for them like bootstrapping, it made sense. But we definitely want shorter auctions, or just, you know, eliminate auctions entirely and come up with a better system. What that better system is definitely a much longer discussion for another day, but there are good ideas out there. I'd be keen to talk more with them about later down the line, like as, you know, we get to the top of our priority list, right?
It's just too deep.
I think high performance computing becomes a lot more important, right? You know, there's definitely going to be a bunch of new tactics that searchers find and start using. I think these private mempools are going to continue to grow, right? And I think eventually they'll like grow to the point where they're like as harmful as the Jito mempool originally was to retail. But I think it's going to be a little bit before we get there, right? Like, I know it was super controversial when Jito turned off their mempool. And obviously, the main reason they did that is because people were getting sandwiched left and right. And most of their stakeholders are people that, again, want, you know, are in it for the long term, that want people to use this network for the long term, right? So we're like, okay, you can extract a little bit of value now. But, you know, what they were doing was they were destroying much more value than they were creating, right? Because in sandwiching all these users, they're never going to use the network again, right? I mean, wouldn't you love to be that retail Joe that, like, you know, throws in your latest paycheck to some dumb meme coin, and then you realize you got sandwiched and lost all? It's like a lot of these people don't even realize what happens, right? If they do realize what happened, they'll definitely be like, okay, not coming back. But even if they don't realize what happened, they'll just be like, oh, I went on Solana and I lost money. And they won't really think much more than that, right? It's a very fast way to kill the network. I do think that like MEV is inevitable, right? I think that sandwiching is really, really hard to prevent at like the application layer. Like, I think the best solutions against like sandwiching are going to have to be at the protocol and L1 layer. Like, not that there's not some stuff that you can do at the application layer, but I think we're really going to have to work with core and like work from, you know, and work from like an L1 perspective, you know, right, in terms of like reducing these negative externalities of MEV. It's a really hard problem to solve. Getting short term, them turning off the mempool was the right decision. Mm-hmm. It will come back. That's just my prediction. I think it'll be a little bit before we see it come back, but like it's only a matter of time before these private mempools get out of hand, and you know, definitely, them and like them at that point, like them turning it back on wouldn't really do anything to change the status quo at that point. But at least this gives us a little bit of time to protect retail a little bit more, preserve value of the network while we actually work on solutions. So that's mm-hmm. definitely a very hot topic in like especially like the Solana MEV and like core communities right now. And it's definitely something we're all like thinking about how to solve. And there's definitely a lot of interesting ideas out there on how to solve this problem. And yeah, hopefully we can all like share more in the next like 100%. Yeah, should be.
Well, we're definitely gonna have another podcast on the future updates. So I'm very keen to see how everything progresses. It's can't wait to have another one and see what kind of games are playing in the future and how we're gonna review them.
Hopefully Solana raises their bounty payouts, so like a lot of countries are more inclined to report these instead of like exploit them. I think we've been really, really good at actually like reporting these and not exploiting them, but like, you know, I can definitely see why like it's super easy to want to exploit one of these, right? I mean, the game's gonna change a lot, right? But yeah, high performance computing gonna be more and more and more important, right? Yeah, as Fire Dancer comes, right? Yeah, we'll see what happens to all the mempool stuff. And yeah, man, I'm sure there's so much in like these next upcoming patches that even I haven't gotten a chance to look at yet. Because, you know, truthfully, man, the game never ends. Like, the game truly
never ends.
All the time, right? You know, you're always trying to innovate new strategies, find new tactics. And like, you know, like, I will say, like, you know, despite, you know, us maybe being like very familiar with like how Solana works internally,
right,
there's still some people out there that do pretty well without knowing how a lot of the internals work.
Yeah,
mostly like the market makers. I think that'll change very quickly as like market makers get more sophisticated. But like, yeah, I mean, like for now, there's definitely some like, you know, traders out there that are like doing pretty good without like knowing any of this crazy like market microstructure, like Solana internal stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to get a lot more competitive. That I can tell you. It's going to get real competitive real fast. There's some pretty, pretty talented teams that are coming onto Solana and they're fucking hungry. So yeah, it's going to be super fun over the next few days, or sorry, the next few months, but also the next few days. But no, I mean, these guys are, they're bloodthirsty. They're hungry. A lot of opportunity on Solana. I mean, I'm excited to have some more competition out there, and this is going to be fun.
Oh yeah. That's what we like to hear.
I think this competition's good, right? You know, it's gonna make markets on Solana a lot more efficient than they are now. And I really hope we can get to that point where Solana is competitive with centralized exchanges.
Definitely. That's coming soon to the, to a shop near you. Yeah. Ben, thank you so much for coming on and spreading the wealth of information. A lot of my viewers are like ETH and EVM kind of people, so I'm sure a lot of people will find this very interesting. So thank you so much for spending the time with me. And I guarantee you, we're probably going to have another podcast soon. So
it's a fun game. No doubt that like the game will be totally different in like a few months.
Time sensitive podcast, guys. Share it around.
Until next time.
Until next time, fellas. GN.